throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kauf with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Thursday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. I don't know if we're ever going to make it to the Belichick stuff because the SEC schedule was released, and I have a feeling that's going to be most of what we talk about today. We'll try to get to Belichick and whether or not he's done in New England. Will he end up somewhere else? But SEC schedule reveal last night. I've got it. I found where somebody put all the schedules in one tidy spot here. Ross Dellinger, I'm sure he's not the only one that did that. I'm sure the SEC actually did it. But he tweeted it out, so I've got two Twitters open right now, Jared. One that just has that schedule, and then one to see if anything breaks as the hour rolls along. So we'll talk a lot about SEC schedules that were released last night. Also, something we didn't get to yesterday. And the punishment was sort of doled out last night, which is really interesting. I don't ever remember if I can see this. If I remember a suspension like this in the NBA, but Draymond Green suspended, quote unquote, indefinitely. So what's the end game for the NBA for Draymond? You know, started seeing a bunch of people with the choking of Gobert, and then what? Week and a half, 2 weeks later, he just flat out punched Nurkic. Is there a method to his madness with who he's attacking? I started seeing some podcasts from former NBA players thinking he's singling out a certain group of people, which is pretty weird. In-season tournament, did it work for you? And if it did, how would you improve it? Then Thunder tonight, Sacramento. This is a team that Thunder haven't had much success against. Kings have won seven straight. It's kind of a weird team to have a seven-game win streak over the Thunder, right? The King, it just seemed, I heard that yesterday, I thought, huh. You know, it's not like it's the Bucks or, you know, the Nuggets or, you know, somebody like that. The Kings? Anyway, that's tonight right here on these airwaves, 9 o'clock, 7:30 for the pregame. We'll talk a little Thunder as well, looking at their schedule ahead for the remaining 10, really 9 before New Year's, but Boston is the second. January 2nd, so that 10-game stretch, pretty tough. Look at strength of schedules as well. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. Any of those things, whatever else might be on your mind, feel free to chime right in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the area, stay in touch with the show a couple of ways. The stream, KADSAM.com, or download the app. The app's got it all with the radio stations, with Penny News. Brand new edition that Penny News is out right now. Go pick up a free copy of the Penny News at your favorite local newsstand. And, of course, Big Elk and Paragon TV, what, Friday and some Saturday. I know I'm playing Saturday, but I may be the only one. But that'll wrap up the pre-Christmas break portion outside of the Birth of Frank T with Merritt on the 28th, 29th, and 30th. How are you today, Jared?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I was a little bit disappointed in your scrooginess last night.
I'm still getting over this stuff. What do you mean?
You didn't participate
in the
game.
Yeah, and that was by design, so we can leave early.
Well, I'll be honest with you.
We and my wife, it was even pushing me. It's like, don't go if you don't feel good. It's like, you know what I remembered? I got sick this time a year ago, and I missed last year's Christmas party.
Yeah, you did.
And I told Allie, no, we're not making that 2 years in a row. I'm not missing Simon's Catch 2 years in a row.
Well, it was good.
It was very good, as always. So
it was good.
I got there, and I found a spot where I didn't think I would be.
You're in the corner. Yeah, they put baby in the corner.
Well, I put myself in the corner because I didn't want to spread my germs.
We were a little bit late arriving, and you know, the biggest disappointment about that was?
What's that? Yeah. Why? What? I almost said something I probably shouldn't have said on air or couldn't say on air.
There were two. One I'll share.
Okay. What's the one you can share?
As it turns out, Simon's Catch is back with the tubular Hush Puppies.
Yeah, those are awesome. Those are awesome. Always awesome. I don't dip them in the butter? No, that's what I'm saying. I don't dip it in the tartar sauce or tartar, whatever you say it. I dip it in the butter.
Yeah, me too.
Not healthy at all. Don't care.
Guess what? But those tubular ones, they fit right in that little deal of butter that they put on. It's just perfect.
It's like they're
just made for rounded edges. You can like actually get down in the little groove and get all that butter out.
Scoop it out. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
No, it was very good. Fantastic meal. Food's always good. Company's always good. Great, you know. It's sometimes the only time of the year I get to see our awesome Penny News delivery drivers.
Right.
So it's awesome to see them and had a packed house, and the Dirty Santa looked fun. You look like you're having fun when you restole an item that was taken from you. That was funny. And
shout out Terry, one of our Penny News salespeople.
So what was it? I saw some barbecue sauce.
Okay, there was some sort of barbecue, Trigger Happy barbecue sauce. I personally have never heard of that, but whatever. There was a deal of barbecue rub. It actually was called steak seasoning on there. Two Pig Mafia. That's something I've heard of.
I've heard of that.
Yes. KJ and I actually busted into it to get a little taste of the rub.
There.
It's peppery, but seems like it'll be tasty. And then the icing on the cake was that jalapeno core.
I didn't see that in there.
Yes. So all you got to do is chop off the top of the jalapeno, put that deal in there. Looks like just kind of just make it like a circle and just pull out all the ribs and seeds. You don't even have to touch it.
Then
you can stuff the jalapenos whole.
You can do your jalapeno poppers if you like to stuff them in the middle like that or whatever.
If you want to keep it, instead of slicing them long ways, and kind of making, you can stuff them whole that way much easier. That was a handy dandy deal right there.
That sounds great. And it just so happened, you're the connoisseur of cooking, whether it be smoking or grilling or whatever, and you just happened to open up that present.
Yeah,
Rattle off the bat.
Yeah, KJ got the pots and pans, and I was next.
Yeah. And you ultimately wound up with it. I even thought about just contributing and then not participating.
Yeah, but that messes up the game.
But that does mess up the game, yeah.
Yeah, we actually had the conversation of, let's just leave our presents here and go.
Yeah. I just couldn't make it. I went straight home, went straight to bed. I've been battling this thing and trying to get myself better. I battled through last night, and good food, good people, good times.
So when we got done, news had kind of broke that Draymond Green now has been suspended indefinitely.
It's like a broken record with this guy.
Yeah, but not
indefinitely.
I don't even remember an NBA suspension being indefinite. Seems like they always put a limit on it game-wise. He got 5 games for choking Rudy Gobert. And then, a week and a half later, 2 weeks later, whatever it's been, here he is he can say flailing to get calls all he wants. He punched Yusuf Nurkic in the face because he got frustrated. Mm-hmm. And now the indefinite suspension, a lot of talk yesterday about how long that suspension should be. Should it for sure double to 10 at a minimum? 50. I actually saw people nationally calling for him to be suspended the rest of the year. And I guess My question about the length of the suspension would be this. What is long enough to matter to maybe change behavior for Draymond Green? Or is there any way to change behavior for Draymond Green?
I don't think there is an amount that's going to change what he's doing. I kind of equate this as kind of like a bully. Like growing up, there was all those. You always had those bullies in school, and they would always get detention or ISS or suspended. They'd come back, and the pattern continued. It didn't stick, and this is just the same. I don't know if this calls for a full season suspension. I mean, there are worse things that could be done. Ja Morant, for crying out loud. It's like he was trying to get suspended for a full season, and he got X amount of games, and he will be back this year. So I think it's going to – where it's going to hurt him is it should – now, if you're not playing, you're not getting paid, assuming?
He still gets to practice.
I wonder if he gets if you can't perform on in a game, you don't get paid. I don't know what the CBA says, what's allowed or not allowed.
But I think you lose the pay. Or if you don't lose the pay, you can administer some sort of fine that works the same way.
Because the difference between a bully in school and this big bully, he's self-dependent. That's where it's going to hurt him. If they find a way to fine him to a point where he's realizing, I'm losing money by doing what I'm doing, I need to stop. That's where I think where they should attempt to start. And then if that doesn't work, then I almost feel sad for the guy. He almost needs help. I think there's something mentally inside him that thinks that this is all okay. It's no big deal. It's in the confines of a game where I'm protected and I can do this. This is just a part of the game. And other people are starting, even people in his own, I mean, his coworkers, his team, everybody is like, dude, this isn't normal behavior. So it's somewhat, that's where I feel sad for him. Like, what is going on really mentally with you, man, to always think that it's okay to flail your arms, intently or not, and hit somebody to cause physical harm, and do you think it's okay, I'll take my punishment and move on and do it again. But I think that's where it's going to have to start for him to understand where it's going to hurt him is his paybook, his paycheck, his bank account. That's where I think it should start. And who knows, when it says indefinitely, I'm sure Silver's thinking, okay, how do we handle this one this time? And we'll probably see some hefty fines.
So he loses game checks.
He does lose game checks, yeah.
Yep.
Well, there you go.
See, question is...
but he always has those endorsement deals.
Well, I mean...
And I wonder if those, like Chunky Beef Soup or whoever is endorsing him says, you know, we're tired of being we don't want you as a face of this. It hasn't happened yet, but I wonder when that's coming.
So let's see. He's set to make $25.8 million. We're about a quarter of the way through the season. So let's say essentially 26 milli, and he gets a fourth of that. He's already made a fourth of that. So that's what, 6.5 million? So, yeah, I mean, you look at that, and if you lose the rest, you know, 19 million bucks, 19 and a half million bucks, whatever that is, that's a whole bunch of money. He's made his full career earnings in the 156 range, counting his entire salary. No, that was through last year. I'm sorry. 22.3 this year for 23 and 24. So, yeah, 5.5. So he's made 5.5, and he would lose whatever that is, 16.5 to get to 22. But he's already made $156 million. So I understand. I think that's where it happens, though. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, you know, he's always been kind of that guy, that bad boy, that lightning rod of this team. But this seems different, doesn't it? This seems a little bit more desperate almost. And you know what I've noticed about Draymond Green? As his play declines, these incidents go up. Mm-hmm. You know, before when he was a fantastic player, yeah, you saw it against LeBron. You saw it against Steven Adams. But it was like once a year, once every couple years type thing. Now, these are more and more and more happening, and I think it has a direct relationship with his play declining.
There's probably some frustration
and
there.
Frustration. For this is the first time this team is kind of lost. Mm-hmm. They're getting older. The end is clearly near. If it's not this year, you know what I'm saying? I mean, there is definitely an end to this that is out there, and they all know it. Klay Thompson is a shell of himself. You know, the other night, they didn't have Wiggins, Klay, or who was the other, Kevon Looney, in the closing lineup. I mean, that's absurd. You know, and Steph is probably the MVP if you really look at what he's done to keep this team afloat. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just been incredible. And I wonder if maybe this ends up being – it's not going to elongate the Warriors that we know's run, but it might elongate Steph Curry's run because you get some younger guys in there that they drafted.
Well,
and everybody's been looking for Kuminga and Moses Moody and some of those guys to play. maybe this helps him out individually, but not necessarily the what we know as the Warriors.
Well, back to Draymond, and this could help Steph too. I mentioned the money thing. If that's is that what it's going to take to get his attention to stop doing this? I think another thing that's going to get his attention is when. When is Steve Kerr going to stand up and back up what he actually talks about with, when his political stances and stuff? When's he going to stand up and say that this is wrong? He should. But, when is Golden State just going to say, we're fed up with this guy, and they just get rid of him? They trade him, and they try to say, okay, Steph, we're going to help you out here. We're going to get rid of this guy. We're going to get what we can get for him, maybe some draft picks or whatever. We're moving on from this guy. We don't want to be associated with him. And maybe that can humble him, Draymond, a little bit. We're just saying, man, this team that drafted me, who I helped get championships, and now they just got rid of me. Or does it just add fuel to the fire and he gets more angry and starts flailing and punching?
They're not going to do it. People? They've enabled this behavior. They are the reason. Steve Kerr is the reason he acts out. They've never done anything to him.
They just sit there.
Look what happened last year. He punched a teammate in the face, and love or hate Jordan Poole, and I know, of course, all of a sudden it came out once he was gone that, oh, yeah, he was more of the problem than Draymond. Now, it's enabling behavior. We see it with parents that we know with their children. That's just what this is.
The bully thing.
That's what this is. They've enabled this child to act out all these years and done nothing to him because he was a hugely valuable. Now, here's the question to your point. When the antics become more than the value on the court, that's when you might see
a
change.
Saying. Yeah.
And I think there's one other thing that we all assume that's happening for life after basketball with Draymond.
Yeah,
the TNT thing. And
does
being
he feel like he's protected? Like he goes, no matter what happens, I got a job after
well,
this.
But what if they... then says, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Now, whether, you can say whatever you want about, like, Chuck. I mean, everybody loves Chuck now. You know, Chuck was kind of a hard A. not too dissimilar to what Draymond, if we really think about what he was as a player. But, I mean, that was the time, though. A lot of those guys were like
that. Exactly. That's where I was going to go. That was that mid-90s basketball was very rough and tough, and there was a lot more going. It was like a unspoken thing. Like, okay, this is just how it's played here. If we're going to get banged around, we better bang back. And then off the court, they were happy kumbaya in a way. And then the way the game's being called, too. I don't think – back then, it was just technicals, right? I think I heard this somewhere. There was no flagrant ones, flagrant twos. It was just technicals back then.
You get kicked out of the game for punching somebody
or
whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that's – but – the way Rodman played, you mentioned Barkley. I'm sure there's a long list of others. And it was and that's the thing we always hear about, when it comes to debate of, the GOAT, LeBron or MJ. And people always say, well, LeBron wouldn't be able to hang back then, the mid-90s, how rough and tough that version of the NBA was. Now it's all finesse. But I wonder how that would translate if you take Draymond today, you take him, you plug him into that era of basketball, there'd be a lot of retaliation, from Chuck and from Rodman and from.
Well, I just think that he almost fits back then more than
it is. Yeah, that's right. It's kind of an old style, but not necessarily commending it. But that's how it was played back then. But now, though, it's become out of hand. Has Golden State ever suspended or fined Draymond?
Go back to your point of
enabling this behavior. Have they, as a franchise, said, "Hey, man, we got to fine you here,"
or
they
suspended, just let they just okay? Here you go.
They leave it to the league to do it.
November 13th, 2018, suspended from the Golden State Warriors. The reason I say that is them because you come down here. March of 23, suspended by the league. April of 23, okay. Suspended by the league. So I'm going to say one game suspension in November.
One game.
And you know what? I think
he got a night off.
I think it had to do with the Kevin Durant thing. Remember that? It was at the Clippers. They started yelling at each other on the floor
at the end of
a game situation. Yeah. I think it may have stemmed from that.
I can see that's where a franchise would say, where the league goes, that's an internal thing. You guys need to handle
right.
it.
Yeah. As opposed to, you know, altercations right. with other teams' right. players. In-season tournament. Did it do anything for you? It sure – I'll say this about the in-season tournament. Whether or not it did anything for the fans, I think it certainly did for the players because I think the players really embraced this thing. And especially, you know, you look at a team like Indiana who ends up in the finals.
Yeah.
And how much 500K matters to some of those dudes on that bench and even some of the guys that play. A young team that hasn't really gotten paid yet like some others – you know, like the guys on the Lakers, for sure. I think that incentive really kind of, player-wise, I think they embraced it and they really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, player-wise, I think you're right. It anted up the level of competition in a time of the season where it's boring, there in October and November or whenever. And we mentioned earlier, you know, we think we figured out why they did it because it was like in-season tournament, we barely started the season. Well, they're doing this to keep interest between, like, the beginning of the season and, say, the Christmas games, and then after the Christmas games to the All-Star break, et cetera. And they did it right there in the middle of football season, so it gives them something to throw at football and try to compete with. So, but again, the player thing, yeah, I think it engaged them. It kept them going, you know, no resting, no time off. Now, as a fan, I think the number I saw, it was I think Clay Travis tweeted this out, 4% increase of viewers compared to last year. He declared that as a bust. I said, well, if that's an increase, then it brought some fans in to watch. So that's where I say it kind of worked for the fans side of things. It was interesting with obviously the jersey combinations and the court and, you know, the eye pleasure there. But I think – you know, then we'll move on here and talk about, you know, what can improve it. I think there was so many questions to me anyways, was like, how's this work? So like the structure.
Sure.
And I couldn't even explain it. I was like, well, it's pool play and then bracket play. That's all I can tell you. And I know is when you see that special court, it's a tournament game. So pay attention and it's important to get a win here and then hope you can advance into the bracket play. And you know how bracket play works. But so maybe make it a little less, maybe the structure of it be a little less complicated for the novice fan.
Just, yeah, it was, you know, kind of convoluted because, I mean, if you paid, you knew Tuesdays and Fridays were games
yeah.
that counted for the in-season tournament. But then you also had Wednesday, Thursday, every other week, every other day of the week, games were going on. And you're like, okay, does this count? You're right. The court, I think that was ingenious. At least it lets you know when you tuned in, boom, this is a
right,
tournament game
right.
because of changing the court. For me, I think they're on to something with the players liking it. So now how do you meld that to the fan participant, the fans knowing? I think this is simple. This is simple. You start like now, or you start like Tuesday, the Tuesday last, you know, a couple days ago. You start then. And you play more games because it's just four games. You know, it's kind of hard to figure out who was going to be, da-da-da. Say play eight games. And you do it over a two- or three-week stretch. And then you get to – it is so obvious when the championship game of this thing ought to be.
Yeah.
It's the crown jewel of Christmas.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You've got to incorporate this tournament with Christmas. It gets you away from college football. Because college football is essentially over until the big bowls or the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You're out of there. You're in that stretch in between. The NFL's the NFL. Too bad. You're going to have to mess with that. But, you know, Christmas Day, I think it's obvious how this can be improved. Because then if you just have like 2 weeks to play those games, then every game is a tournament. You don't have – there's no question in your mind,
yeah.
Ooh, does this count or this – you know, they all count. They're all tournament games. There's a bigger sample size of it to then create an easier way to follow the standings or, you know, and that kind of thing. And then you have games like this year. You would have games on Friday the 23rd or what would that be? Saturday the 23rd.
Yeah, Saturday, yeah.
Would be the semifinals, and then yeah. the finals. You know, you can have, and then by then, you can make Christmas Day a thing with teams that aren't playing. You know what I mean? You can figure that out. Sure. It may not be the teams you want, but hey, whatever. It's still the – I think that's an easy way to do
it. Yeah, it's always special to get a Christmas Day game for your team. Well, it would be really special if they could earn it and play for a championship 100%. In the in-season tournament. That even though they're like, oh, well, we were left out of a Christmas Day game, but we could play our way into one. That'd be pretty cool.
It'd be hard to schedule out in advance because you don't know who's going to be in the finals.
No.
You'd have to wait until – I mean, honestly – you probably anybody that's in the final four, the other two teams are out of Christmas because they'd play that Saturday. You know, it'd be hard to, or maybe, you know what? Maybe you have a third place game.
Oh, yeah.
And that could be another Christmas Day game from Vegas.
That'd be fun.
And then that way,
have that in the afternoon and the championship
there
at night.
There you go. Or what? Yeah. And then sprinkle in some other games as well, the teams that didn't make the tournament.
I'd be okay with that. Yeah. And Vegas is a great spot for it, too.
Sure it is.
For what they're doing.
I think it's a good idea, and it can work. Just tweak a little bit.
I don't want them to wipe the board clean and totally redo a structure. You know, tweak it.
Yeah, just tweak.
Because someone's probably going, okay, I just figured this out. Now you just totally revamped it.
Just add a few games to it and kind of the same thing.
Yeah. It was fun, though. It was interesting.
The players obviously liked it. A couple questions on the text line. Is indefinite not the rest of the year? Not necessarily. Indefinite is almost like open-ended to me, right?
Yeah, it's like when you send your kid the timeout, like usually I'll say, it's timeout 5 minutes. Well, sometimes I get so mad and I'll say, timeout, and I'll let you know when you're out of timeout.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where it is. I'll let you know.
Yeah.
Don't call us, we'll call you, Draymond, when it's time for you to play again.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the SEC schedule release.
Let's do it.
It's like, okay, talking about this for 3 years now, and when you see this come out last night, it's like, okay, this is officially a thing. Oklahoma and Texas are really going to play in the Southeastern Conference in football. It's really going to happen, and it's going to happen starting next year.
Hey, you know you're officially part of the SEC. I said this last night to a friend. When you have a cupcake in November.
That's right. Yeah.
We got Maine
when
Bears.
When you see Maine on November 2nd in Norman, you know it's real.
You're a part of the exclusive club now.
Pretty interesting that they even got the not only they got the cupcake in between games instead of before Bama. You know, Bama's cupcake normally, you know, leading into LSU a lot of times. Mm-hmm. This year it's going to be leading into Oklahoma. So what did you think about the order? We'd seen a bunch of guesses as far as what the schedule could be. So what did when you actually see the order and the way the schedule lays out, what did you think about that as far as Oklahoma?
My first reaction was, as I bring it up, I saved it on my phone, but I'm going to bring it up the computer. It manageable, but gets tough. I mean, it is the SEC, and when we saw who Oklahoma was going to play back in whenever that was, September, when they released all that stuff, we thought, oh, boy. And now the only question was, when is that going to take place? So, again, manageable, but it's going to be tough. I do like how the perceived toughest games are towards the end of the year, because by then OU's identity should be well intact and we're going to understand what the football team will be like when they take on Missouri, when they take on Alabama and LSU. It could be all up for them. I mean, for everything up for grabs, or it could just be, well, they're coming in at whatever in three and now they're just playing for a nice bowl game. But shoot, who knows? With three losses, you could still be in the mix for an SEC title game appearance. But that's why I'm glad it wasn't, because I had a feeling they're going to be like, all right, you're welcome to the SEC moment. It's going to be on September 21st versus Alabama.
Yeah, we knew that wasn't going to happen.
You know, I'm glad that wasn't the case or the first road game at Baton Rouge. That's where I use the word manageable. Hosting Tennessee for the first game, very winnable. And then going to Auburn, which is always a tough place to play at Jordan-Hare. Auburn kind of struggled last year, but look, I mean, they gave Georgia and Alabama tough games right there on the High Plains. So and then of course Texas, and so then it gets, you know, the road gets more treacherous as the season goes on. So that's how I first reaction was, like, well, it's manageable, but it's gonna be tough. It's gonna be really tough, and a lot of people are ranking this schedule as the toughest in the SEC.
Yeah, I don't think that's right, but there's two versions of an SEC schedule right now for Oklahoma and Texas, because they are each other's permanent opponent mm-hmm. in an 8-game conference schedule. Oklahoma plays one side of that schedule, Texas plays the other, and at least for right if you're just judging from this season going into next season, there's no doubt that Oklahoma got the harder side of those seven teams. So it's Bama, South Carolina, Tennessee, Auburn, Ole Miss, Missouri, and LSU, or the flip of that is Georgia, Kentucky, A&M, Mississippi State, Vandy, Arkansas, and Florida. I mean, these things can bounce back and forth. If all of a sudden Florida is dominating Tennessee, Arkansas is dominating Missouri, you know, Mississippi State switch places with Ole Miss, you know, they can obviously change in a heartbeat, right? And Kentucky and South Carolina, you know, whatever that might be. But at least for right now, at least for this season, if you're looking ahead to next, there's no doubt that OU got the harder side of those two versions than Texas in year one, because Texas gets the other part of that with the Georgias, Kentuckys, and all that. Things that stood out to me, I mean, we'd seen a bunch of when you knew. So we've known Oklahoma, Alabama was November 23rd for a while now. That was one of the few games that had a time. That had a date at least released here in the last month and a half or 2 months. Since then you start guessing. And the one thing that I noticed right off, the difference between the actual schedule and those guesses, there's no back-to-back road games. And in a lot of those versions, you saw like three straight. Like you saw Auburn, Missouri, LSU, Auburn, Mississippi, LSU, all on the road, or, you know, whatever the combinations were, like three straight, like a gauntlet, right, mm-hmm. of road games. You don't see that. And so that's a huge positive, I think, if you're Oklahoma, splitting those things out. The other thing that jumps off the schedule, seven home games, has been forever since Oklahoma. It seems like it's been forever since they've had that many. And then, of course, byes ahead of what would be perceived as two of your hardest couple of games for sure, a bye ahead of Texas, a bye ahead of Alabama. And, you know, that seven-game home game, it actually would be eight if Texas was home and home, because OU would be the home team in the Red River rivalry right. coming up this year. Right. So that's but I think that's going to be a standard. I think you're going to see that as kind of a standard thing moving forward, with eight conference games and the difficulty of what the SEC is. I don't know that Oklahoma is going to be fired up. You know, that's been a staple of Joe Castiglione's scheduling since he got there, mm-hmm. is there's a lot of times at least one marquee non-conference game, either home or away. I don't know if you're going to see that with eight, especially here in the early part of the 12-game playoff, to kind of figure out and gauge how that works with the at-larges.
Yeah, that's not just an OU thing. I think we're going to start seeing those big-time early season games kind of go away, unfortunately, because of what realignment's giving us in the 12-team playoff.
Yeah.
So instead of, you know, OU going to find, now there is that caveat of playing have to play a P5 school, right?
Yeah.
But and that's when they got Houston. But, you know, they're not going to go find Michigan. They're not going to go find Michigan State, or, you know,
maybe not.
not for the first few seasons of this 12-team conference or 12-team playoff. I think they're going to wait till. See how what that matters. You know, does it matter?
How the committee how the committee views stuff.
Right, right.
Which is impossible to decide because they left out an undefeated Power 5 conference champ. Yeah, so who knows? Who got the biggest shaft?
I wrote down, excuse me, maybe Auburn? They have a stretch there where they play, and there's a bye in there, but in this stretch. But they play Arkansas, OU, at Georgia. I think there's a bye here, and then at Missouri, then at Kentucky. So, I mean, that's you talk about the back-to-back road games are non-existent for OU. You got three tough road games if you're Auburn, with Georgia, Missouri, and Kentucky all in a row there. That could really derail their season. Even if they win versus, say, Arkansas and OU, but then, boom, here's your reward.
All right, so I'm going to read you a conference schedule in the SEC from this season. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Host South Carolina, at Auburn, host Kentucky, at Vanderbilt, Florida, host Missouri, host Ole Miss, at Tennessee. Pretty light. Wouldn't you agree?
Would that be Georgia?
That's exactly. So now next year, their SEC schedule, at Kentucky, at Alabama, host Auburn, host Mississippi State, at Texas, Florida, obviously the cocktail party, mm-hmm. at Ole Miss, host Tennessee. That is a infinitely tougher schedule for the Georgia Bulldogs than what they faced this year. Some stretches that are impossible. The winner of the toughest stretch goes to Florida, and it's not even close. So the month of November, they play five games in November without a bye, and those five games are cocktail party against Georgia, go to Texas, LSU comes to town, Ole Miss comes to town, and then their final game is non-conference, but it's at Tallahassee against Florida State. Ouch.
That's a tough one.
That is a tough stretch for the Florida Gators. You know who else has a pretty tough stretch? The Crimson Tide of Alabama.
When would that be? Who do they got?
So they open November with a bye. They have their cupcake on November 16th with Mercer. But the last three games on the SEC schedule, at LSU, the Mercer game, in Norman, and then the Iron Bowl. And if you go back before that bye, they're at Tennessee, host Missouri. And, of course, Georgia, they host Georgia back in September. That's a pretty tough stretch.
That's a tough schedule. That's a tough one.
So here is Georgia's tough one, right in the middle from September to October. At Bama, host Auburn, host Mississippi State, at Texas. That's pretty for real.
Yeah.
Let's see. I wrote down a couple others.
The key thing for me when I look at tough stretches are, especially in the SEC, I mean, you could omit, like, Vanderbilt. That's almost the only one you can admit, because even going to Starksville sometimes is going to be really tough.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the at next to the opponent. It's where you're going and how many times you got to go. You know, yeah. That's why I put Auburn there, that three-game stretch where, like, for a month they won't be at home.
Mm-hmm. And then depending, you know, if you get a Georgia or Alabama, it doesn't matter where that game's at, right?
True.
So Ole Miss, they go at LSU. They get a bye, then Oklahoma comes to town. They go at Arkansas, then Georgia comes to Oxford. And South Carolina, there's no byes in between here. They host Ole Miss, then they go to Bama, to Oklahoma. There's back-to-backs. There's some pretty good back-to-backs. You mentioned Auburn, Oklahoma, and then at Georgia, and then later in the season, A&M, then at Tuscaloosa. OU has Bama, the last two games of the season, Bama at home at LSU. That's really intriguing. And then Texas has the game in Dallas, and then host Georgia. That's another back-to-back. I mean, everybody's kind of got back-to-backs, right?
Yeah, I saw that with Texas. Was there not a – I didn't see where their byes were, or bye.
Before OU and November 2nd, which would be leading into Florida. They don't get their – they get a bye – in November, but they don't get their game in November.
Even one of those cupcakes?
No, they don't get theirs one? Is in September. UL Monroe. Hmm. So they don't. Their November is by Florida at home, at Arkansas, Kentucky at home, at A&M. That's how they finish in November. So they don't get that, you know, New Mexico State against A&M, which may not be quite as easy as we thought. Just ask Auburn.
That's funny. Yeah. Yeah, if you're an OU fan and Texas fan, you know all too well of the hangover game, the next week game after the Cotton Bowl. That's a tough one for Texas coming out of the Cotton Bowl, depending on how that goes. And then you got to turn around and play Georgia. I mean, would you rather play Georgia at home or South Carolina at home? For OU, you get
South Carolina.
But again,
you know what else is going on in Austin
the
that weekend?
That's the beast, though. That's the SEC. I mean, it's if it's not Georgia, it's going to be someone else.
So that Georgia weekend down in Austin is also the Formula One race.
Oh, really?
And there's a lot of people that think Austin scheduled the F1 on that date to try to keep Georgia fans out of Darrell K. Royal Stadium because there's nowhere to because of the difficulty of getting like hotel rooms.
I think Georgia would wake up early and drive from Athens. They don't care if they're staying or they'll sleep in their cars in the parking lot.
Brilliant idea, though. You got to give it up.
I thought you were going to tell me they're actually going to have the race during the game and you could hear the cars outside.
Well, that'd be pretty cool,
during
too.
During the Georgia's offensive series.
Oh, don't kid yourself. They go flying by there at the right time. Let's take a break. We talked about non-conference and how that might change moving forward, but there are still some juicy matchups,
at least
for this year.
Found a couple.
We'll hit the non-conference games we're looking forward to seeing. I mean, this will probably be OU Texas heavy just because it's a new thing for them, but there's
I've found a couple elsewhere.
Yeah. I mean, Bama, Georgia is always pretty awesome when it happens. Looking at the newly released SEC football schedule for 2024, kind of dissecting it with some different stretches for teams that are difficult games we can't wait to see and whatever else is there. We mentioned non-conference and how that could be effective moving forward. 12-team playoff, I think, helps at least continue some non-conference scheduling difficulty-wise. Now, will it continue? I think both of us believe that that'll be almost completely up to how the committee views that non-conference scheduling as a positive or if, in losses, especially if it's viewed as a giant negative. But at least for now, we do have some pretty juicy non-conference matchups on this SEC football schedule. What are some of them that popped out to you?
On the SEC?
No, the non-conference games for the SEC schedule or for anybody, I guess.
For anybody? Well, I started with Texas at Michigan next year. I mean, that could easily be a national championship rematch depending on how the playoffs go. And, I mean, that's in September, if I'm not mistaken. It's week two. Yeah, it's not the first game, but it's not the last. So, that one, and it's at Michigan, and that'd be it's going to be playoff participants playing each other. So that one caught my eye. That's the first one. How about you?
Yeah, Dev, I wrote that one down. I just looked at off of this SEC schedule, kind of who.
I went the countrywide.
You know, LSU is playing both LA schools. They've got Southern Cal week one in Vegas, and then they host UCLA toward the end of September. That's pretty ambitious scheduling by the Bayou Bengals. You've always got like Florida at Florida State. It seems like Clemson and Georgia have played each other a little bit recently. This year's going to be a neutral site.
It's week one.
Yeah, in Atlanta. We saw that a couple of years back, that first Georgia title team of the two just suffocated Clemson. Remember that? I mean, they gave up 3 points and a pick six. A near pick six was – or maybe it was 7 points and a pick six is all they got.
I think so.
10-7 maybe was the final of that game. So you've got that one. Bama going to Wisconsin. You don't necessarily see the Crimson Tide on the road in these non-conference matchups. You see them in neutral sites a bunch, but not necessarily on the road. Notre Dame goes to A&M. I think that's pretty interesting. And then local flair-wise, I think it's cool that Arkansas and Oklahoma State are going to play.
That's true.
And this year it'll be in Stillwater week two. That week two has a bunch of intriguing games as far as what the SEC has in the non-conference.
Yeah, you mentioned the USC at LSU or versus LSU at Vegas. And I stick with the USC because then like 2 weeks later they go to – or not 2 weeks, but one of their first conference games in the Big Ten is at Michigan. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the Big Ten. Here we are talking about the SEC, but that Michigan schedule or Big Ten schedule looks just as juicy. And then speaking of Big Ten, how about Ohio State at Dylan Gabriel in Oregon?
Fantastic.
Yeah, that one stood out to me too.
Oh, well, see, welcome here I am. Here I am thinking, man, they rescheduled each other in the non-conference already. Well, they just played a couple years ago, but it's a conference
game. It's in Eugene, and that's kind of going to be there, you know, along with DG and Oregon. They're welcome to the Big Ten moment. It's like, here you go. Here's Big Ten perennial favorite, the Ohio State Buckeyes, coming to town.
How long is it going to take you to get over the fact that all these teams are in the same – and these are conference games?
It's going to be hard to –
when you said that right off the bat, I was like, oh man, because they played with CJ Stroud's like first big game was that. Why are they already scheduling each other again?
Goes back to what we're saying is we're not going to see these non-conference games because they're conference games.
Well, some of it is that for sure. I mean, and quite frankly, at the end of all of this, you're down to four conferences that can create matchups that you really want to see outside the league. You're down to Big 12, Big 10, ACC, SEC.
And in the way this, you know, these super conferences that are forming, and we talk about the, oh, it's sad that these awesome non-conference, early season non-conference games are going away. Some of these games are going to feel like really special, even though they're conference games, because they're only going to play like every 4 years or something
every
like that.
Every four.
Right? So it's still going to have kind of that special feeling, I guess. Like, we don't get these guys every year. We only get them once every 4 years. So we got to make it worth it. And you're going
to. At least at home. I think at least early on. Until we get used to the fact that these teams are in the same conference, I think it's going to feel like when Tennessee comes to Norman in September, I think it's going to feel like a big out-of-conference game.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Until you get used to them rolling in every couple years.
Yeah, it is.
You know, that Bama game in November, maybe it's toward the end of the season, so it won't feel that way, but I don't know. I still think it'll kind of feel like one of those giant games that because you're just not used to seeing the Tide on that field.
Funny side note, I watched the OU Arkansas basketball game on Saturday. Fun game. And OU, I'm not going to get excited yet, but I'm still very optimistic now. But did you see that at the end of the game, OU won, obviously, and, you know, they on the bottom on ESPN, they changed their record. As soon as it goes final, they changed their record. You know, OU. What are they, 9-0? And then right next to it, in parentheses, they put 1-0.
It's conference.
It's not a conference game yet, guys. It's not, because they kept saying, this will be a conference game next year. They won't play this in Tulsa anymore, but it was a fun 3 years when they played it, da-da-da. Next year will be a conference game. Then it went final. I'm like, the graphics guy is halfway paying attention. He heard, conference game, and he made it. Well, OU is 1-0 now in the SEC. That's something to hang the hat on this year.
It's, you know, that'll come later, I guess. There's so much football on our minds because
of basketball. All of it. I mean, how about, you know, what I'm almost more excited about is the softball. OU.
There's a lot of softball.
OU playing in the SEC against Florida and Georgia. And there's some good teams in the SEC who play softball, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you think about Oklahoma and Texas getting to go to the Fog. In basketball, that's been a thing. Obviously, Kansas is as good as it gets.
Right.
But it also opens up to Rupp Arena, Bud Walton Arena in Arkansas. You know, there's some different venues
whatever they call it over there in Florida. They produce some good teams. Yeah, that too.
You know, that all goes in with it, as far as the different venues you get to travel to, and you know, it's
of course, baseball, man. Welcome to the minor leagues, right?
Yeah. I may not be skipping the boys, and that may be the worst one as far as being ready to go for the SEC. But, you know, that the schedule is cool, and, you know, it's going to be build up all summer long. And everybody's trying to make their predictions. Okay, what's Oklahoma going to go? That's impossible right now.
You don't even know who's going to be on the
team. You don't know who's on the team. That's something that it almost feels like an exercise in futility, right? Mm-hmm. Because there is no way for anybody to even try to accurately predict any of this, because it's not just Oklahoma's team. Nobody knows who's going to be on anybody's team.
This thing I saw last night when they're, you know, overanalyzing these schedules and they got to OU, and I appreciate this. They weren't going to do that. They weren't going to take that bait, but they were saying, you know, this is like with Feinbaum and Tebow and Joey Galloway for some reason. I'd appreciate if the SEC network would keep SEC guys on their airwaves. It was more like, okay, what about the style? You know, how's the style going to go up against? It's not about personnel, but the style, you know. So that starts with the head coach, though, you know, with Brent Venables. That's one why they got him. That's why Brent went and got Schmitty, to get tougher, to get the guys tougher, get them ready for the gauntlet of a schedule that we just went over. And so the real question is not what's the record going to be. It's like, how are they going to be acclimate that first year with the style of the SEC week in and week out? And that remains to be seen, too, because that does go back into, well, who's on the team?
Yeah, it does.
You know, who's the personnel on the team?
It does. I just, you know, is it going to be more difficult week in, week out? I don't think there's any doubt from a physicality standpoint. You know, even Mississippi State, who isn't any good, is a more physical team than throw out one of the, you know, Kansas. Baylor, whoever, you know, however you want to match it across, whatever.
Right.
But I'll go back to, I mean, let's be honest here. And there's a lot of doom and gloom around the Oklahoma program because of Caden Green leaving and the offensive line. I get it. It's totally new. I totally understand, like, the concern. But to immediately think that Oklahoma as a program in football is doomed to 6-6, 7-5 in the SEC, give me a break. Missouri won 10 games this year. If Missouri can win 10 games in the SEC, so can Oklahoma. Come on. I mean, no offense to our buddy Tyler, Ole Miss won 10 games. Ole Miss, OU, if you look at the programs historically, come on.
Right. And, yeah, there is the standard there at OU, and I've already seen some, and I don't know how someone would compile a preseason way too early top 25 list for next year, but a lot of people, a consensus says OU is top 15, some top 10.
Yeah, I saw one without a minute, and that's just clearly a way to get Oklahoma fans to
click on it.
Click on it and comment.
Right. No, that's clickbait stuff.
No.
Their wide receiver room is loaded. Jackson Arnold's potential is high. It's the seeing how they shore up the offensive line, what they do there, and edge rushing too, I think.
Defensive line. Middle of the defensive line.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be some adjustments. I'm not even going to call it growing pains just yet because it's still, you know, you see these lists online, losing seasons in the history of programs. Oklahoma's got less than everybody, but I think Alabama or Ohio State, you know, and it's all single-digit losing seasons for like the, you know, you see a clear separation between what I would consider the blue bloods and everybody else. And so, you know, I'll believe it when I see it, that Oklahoma becomes Nebraska.
Right.
You know, right. I'll believe it when I see it. And until I see it, I'm just not going to believe it because, you know, even in the times of the 90s, it comes back to what it is now. So we'll see.
Yeah. We'll see.
It'll be fun, though.
It's fun. It's fun to look ahead. It's fun to my anticipation level, my excitement level has been high ever since the announcement. But now once we see a schedule and it's cool. It's one of the best. Whether we liked it or not, it is the best conference in college football. I know that a lot of people say, oh, no, it just is. And now that OU and Texas are a part of this exclusive club, it's pretty cool, and it's fun that the quality opponents coming to Norman and Austin have jumped up immensely, and I just can't wait for it.
Yeah, I think that's the
big thing. Norman's going to have a different buzz to it now, even when South Carolina's coming to town, right? As opposed to, no offense, I'm just using my example, Iowa State.
Yeah.
I'd trade that any day. I'll take that trade any day.
Yeah, I think that's – yeah, it's cool when you get Alabama, Georgia, but you also get Tennessee, you get A&M. There's a lot of those other games.
Yeah.
Everybody have a great Thursday. We'll be back to wrap up the week tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.